RadioInfluence.com.
We are back for another edition of the MMA Report Podcast with Dale Galvan. I am Jason Foley. Come up here on this week's edition of the show. We're going to take a look back at what happened at UFC 253, preview this week's MMA, talk about the public battle going on between Conor McGregor and Dana White. And look, and me and Dana, we vow to not interrupt each other every 2 seconds. That's one of the things we try to do every week here on the podcast, is let each other talk. But Daniel, how you doing here on this early Wednesday morning? We had to do a little early Wednesday morning recording because based on both of our schedules.
Yeah, man, I got my cup of coffee. And look, man, I'm salty, but I won't interrupt you. I'm salty that your Tampa Bay Lightning won the Stanley Cup against my favorite team, the Dallas Stars. So I'm a bit salty at you, but leave it be. But congratulations. I'm excited to talk about all the mixed martial arts action. But it's not often in our lives that we see one of our favorite teams win the big one. And, you know, in my entire life, I've never seen one of my favorite teams win the title. So congratulations to you and to all the Tampa Bay Lightning fans for dismantling the Dallas Stars.
Yeah, I tell you what, I did not see that after game one because it did not look good. But yeah, man, that was a great feeling the other night. And the cup has made its way back to Tampa. And yeah, so they're actually doing a boat parade today here in Tampa. And so yeah, it's but I will not be attending, Daniel. I'm doing my social distancing as I am trying to stay away from and limiting whatever because obviously what's going on with COVID-19. But yeah, it's right now it's a fun time here in Tampa. It's actually a little chilly this morning here in Tampa. It's like in the mid 60s, which I'm all down for. I walked outside this morning and I was like, oh man, it feels good in Tampa. Of course, I'm sure by the time we hit about 3 o'clock this afternoon, it'll probably be about 90 degrees. But yeah, but of course, we are here to talk about what's going on in the world of MMA. I do want to mention about some reactions that we got to the podcast last week. Of course, last week we talked about Colby Covington and the comments that he made. We got positive and negative reactions, which I mean, look, I love hearing both sides of it. I think the one negative response I got that kind of stuck out to me was someone basically saying that we're not for the First Amendment, which I didn't quite understand where that person was coming from. I live in a world where, yes, I believe in the First Amendment, but I do not believe that the First Amendment gives you right to have hate speech and to make racist statements. There was another comment that we got on the MMAreport.com as well. Not really. It wasn't really addressed to us. I think it was more kind of addressed kind of just the nature of the situation as well. And the person wrote, she goes, Dana said Colby didn't say anything racist. They're both full of expletive. None of the MMA/sportsmen are talking about it. If a Bellator fighter said something like Colby said, people would destroy them. But the UFC always gets away with stuff like this. People never say anything bad about the UFC. Extremely pro UFC. I mean, look, yes, we are in a sport that's very pro UFC. But as I mentioned my comment back to them, I said, well, we talked about it on the podcast that you are responding to. So, but of course, you know, Dana White was asked about it last Thursday during the UFC 253 pre-fight press conference. And this was, I want to say it was John Morgan that asked the question. John Morgan asked two questions in relation to this. The answer to the first question was, these guys all have their own causes, things, their own beliefs. We don't muzzle anybody here. We let everybody speak their mind. I don't know what he said was racist. I don't know if I heard anything racist that he said. And Morgan's follow-up was basically like, essentially paraphrasing what John said, was like, well, if you did think someone said something racist, you know, would there be, would you react to that? And basically Dana White essentially said yes. And then Colby Covington, who has been making the media rounds, which once again, I don't quite understand from a media aspect why people want to give this guy a form to spew his speech. But he was on Submission Radio and he said, quote, there's nothing that I said that was racist and there's nothing that I did was racist. End of story. Here's my two takes on that in terms of from where I sit, And obviously, Daniel, you're Mexican, so you offer a different perspective than I do as a white man. I don't know how Dana White looks at what Colby Covington said and doesn't understand why a good amount of people, including myself and yourself, believe that was racist. I went a step further. I believe it was hate speech that Colby Covington was spewing last week. And first off, and on the Colby Covington comment, Daniel, who is going to, after the fact, go, yeah, that was a racist statement?
Yeah, I mean, the from Colby Covington's perspective, him calling himself out and holding himself accountable would have been the one way I would have found that redeemable. Because one of the conceits I have in life is that none of us are perfect and we all make mistakes and we're human, right? Like, consistently, I'm making a mistake every dang day. In conversations I have with people or in actions I take, I wouldn't have that one back. It's the way you think about your actions afterwards, I think, really define who you are whenever you make that mistake. Are you conceding that what you did was bad? And obviously there are some mistakes that are so egregious, you should probably spend some time behind bars. But by and large, that's my general philosophy. So personally, I wish I would have seen that out of Colby. But I mean, that's something that would be utterly shocking if he displayed that ability to show some remorse and acknowledge that he made a mistake. I think with Dana, with Colby, with this whole conversation, the longer they talk without actually saying what he said, maybe the more you'll buy into what they're saying. And last week, I really went all in. And it's an uncomfortable topic, so it's not a place we're going to venture in too much today, but it's important to do the housekeeping on it. Because it is an emotional topic, and it's not fun to go out on a podcast and be like, this was racist. Like, that's not a fun conversation to have. But the thing is, when you look at what he said, when he's talking to Kamaru Usman on national television, he's saying, did you get a message from your little tribe with the smoke signals? When you are telling Kamaru that on national television, that is racist. And it feels like their defense is the defense is just saying it's not racist and not so much explaining why. I feel like the onus should be on them because it is so clearly racist what he said. It's like the onus has gone back on us to explain things like why that is racist, or to be like, well, our perception of it is racist. Like, no, that was a racist thing. I feel like that was a very negative stereotype that he employed on Kamaru Usman. I don't think he's telling that to Donald Cerrone if they were talking to each other. And to tell Kamaru, did you get a message from your tribe smoke signals, to tell him that was racist, Colby and Dana are just kind of not acknowledging what he said. So I'm not even going to give the caveat that, like, me and you and others perceive that as racist. That was a racist statement based on how we use the English language and, like, how history has been. If you acknowledge that history and English language do in fact exist, Jason, I would say that statement is racist. And it's just as simple as, it's kind of like a little microcosm of how reality is. You have people who have their opinions first, and then they'll find the facts later. And surely I'm guilty of that in so many different aspects, but I would like to be better, and I would like to look at the facts. And I feel like when you look at the facts, Colby Covington made a very racist statement, and the unfortunate thing is that it was a statement that crossed the line, and it feels like there won't be any repercussions or consequences for it. And that, to me, is the most frustrating thing, to feel like I'm going insane. Because whenever that took place, my thought was that crossed a major line.
Yeah, no, you're spot on. It's just one of these things of, I just when I heard the Dana White comment, my first thought was, A, what would it take? And also, B, at that moment, several fighters had already spoken out about what Colby had said. You know, Akeem Dawodu spoke about it on Wednesday. Shedeur Eubanks spoke out about it. And other fighters have spoke about it on social media. So yeah, it's just something that I wanted to bring up just to kind of, you know, hey, first off, I appreciate the message that I got out there. And, you know, one of the messages is, Daniel, is something kind of like what you just alluded to there is like, hey, it's a tough topic to discuss. But one of our listeners said, he goes, hey, I really did appreciate that you guys did not just skew around it. You actually talked about it. So always do love that interaction we do get with our listeners. Of course, that wasn't the only thing that was in the news with Dana White. The other thing is the fact of him and Conor McGregor, they're not bros right now. I guess that's about the best way to put it, Daniel, in terms of, you know, and one of the things I think about Conor McGregor, when you look at his social media, to me, there is a method to his madness, just like there is a method to how Dana White does things publicly and how he, you know, promotes his brand, the UFC brand and whatnot. And of course, you know, Dana says that Conor broke the man code by releasing direct messages. Should Conor have done that? No, that's not the ethical thing to do. But obviously, Conor's at a point where, to me, like, how should we view what Conor tweeted? My view at Daniel is simply is that Conor McGregor is telling everyone, I want to fight. And I think he's sending a message to Disney going, fellas, I want to fight. I want to make you guys money. I want to make some money, but your partner isn't stepping up to the table.
Yeah. He definitely did break whatever code there is. That's got to be a horrifying thing if you're Dana White and you see that your direct messages are online, because that's like a private conversation turned digital. I mean, sure, there's some guy in some office in the NSA that's just reading every single thing you type in. And then there's also a person working for Facebook that's listening into your phone. And just based on whatever you say in your conversation, they'll show you an ad about it 5 seconds later. So there are those people that are aware of your private conversations. But to see your DMs out there when you're talking some trash about Diego Sanchez, which, well, I mean, that's what we do on the podcast publicly. But when you're saying, you know, Diego won't get licensed to fight Conor, and you're not wrong, that's got to be embarrassing, because Dana's got all these relationships with all these fighters. And, you know, one part of being in a relationship with someone is privately talking crap about other people, okay? That's just human life. We need to get it off our chest, all right? We need to talk a little bit of crap to get it off our chest. We're not perfect. And we should just keep that private, all right? So I feel like you broke the man code. That being said, Conor does a great job of keeping himself in the news. I guess, are we getting him versus Manny Pacquiao, Jason? Is that a thing that is actually happening? I saw it, but then I kind of stopped following the story. Is Conor going to fight Manny Pacquiao in Abu Dhabi?
He gets keep throwing out there, but I mean, look, you know. Whether it happens or not, who knows? I mean, obviously, then you became the whole point of Conor and Dustin Poirier talking about having a charity match in Ireland, which, I mean, look, do I think that happens? No, I do not, because I think the UFC will try to block that in any way matter. But I think as combat sports fans, when you talk about who are the fighters that we want to watch fight, who are the guys that you say they are fighting on this Saturday night, I want to be in front of the television set. That's Conor McGregor. I mean, I think ultimately is that it's now going public, and now, and like, you know, Conor says, tells Dana to stop lying. This is obviously getting, it's become very public, but I think the ultimate thing in all this is the fact of the biggest star in our sport. He wants to compete. And the question ultimately to the UFC is, why are you not making this happen?
Yeah, exactly. It's a bit perplexing. It's as if the greatest boxer in the world couldn't get a fight, or the greatest professional wrestler couldn't get a fight. The comparison to the football and the basketball doesn't work as well because you have your normal schedule. But from a prize fighting schedule, this was something that is perplexing when you first explain it. And then if you put yourself in the UFC shoes, I guess the explanation is, you're not going to make it too much money without the attendance. I guess that's the only thing you would point to, because you're going to do a pretty hard payout for him. But that just seems like it doesn't make any sense based on the sheer number of pay-per-view buys that a Conor McGregor fight against a broomstick will do you. So I think they're going to make a profit on any type of Conor McGregor fight. I don't think that's an outlandish takeaway, that if you put Conor on pay-per-view, you're probably going to be in the green. So with the eagerness of Conor to fight being exposed, it is incredibly head-scratching that we haven't seen him fight, because time only works one way, and the UFC is only going to have a certain amount of time to put Conor McGregor on a pay-per-view. And who knows, that may be 1 year. Hell, that might be 5 years. We're not sure about that, but I guarantee it's probably not 15 years. And it's frustrating that we had this lengthy period where Conor wanted to fight, and he just didn't happen.
No, you're spot on with that, and you know, we'll see how this thing develops. I mean, you know, I just think my thing is, as I said right at the beginning, I believe there's a method to what Conor McGregor's doing, and I really do believe, I think this was his way of sending a message to Disney to let them know, fellas, I want to fight, I want to make money, we're in business together, let's make some money. And I mean, look, and this is the one thing I'll say, if you're Dana White, you know, to get in this battle with Conor McGregor is a firefight. And do you want to get in a firefight with Conor McGregor? Because Conor McGregor could F up the UFC's business real quick. And I was thinking about this morning, Daniel. If this gets worse, what if Conor McGregor said, you know what, fellas? Fine. Hey, UFC fighters, I'm starting a fighters organization, a fighters union, a fighters association. Come join me. That could really mess up the UFC's world.
That could. I think... I don't see that world ever happening. I just don't think Conor is going to be able to do that. But the right person in Conor's ear that uses him as a figurehead, I guess I could see that. But he would need someone in his ear. But Conor himself, I don't know. But that would definitely F up the UFC's world. You know, the other way he could screw over the UFC, and I actually don't even know if he could actually do this, because obviously the UFC has some type of contract with him. But the other way he could screw over the UFC, if he wanted to be pity, is to wait until a big UFC pay-per-view and announce your boxing super fight on that date. A Conor fight the same day as a UFC pay-per-view, I think, would just murder a UFC pay-per-view buy rate. So that's the other way Conor could F up the UFC.
Oh, that is a great point you bring up there. Yeah, that's definitely a point to bring up there. But Dan, let's talk about what happened last Sunday morning in Abu Dhabi, Saturday night here in the United States, UFC 253. And let me start off with this. What was more surprising, how one side of the main event was, or Jan Blachowicz winning the UFC light heavyweight title?
Ooh, that's a good one, Jason. It's weird to see Jan with the UFC gold around his waist, but for me personally, the dominance of Israel Adesanya over Paulo Costa was more surprising. I think my thought process heading into the main event was, this is the beginning of this great trilogy series of the two best middleweights of all time, blah, 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 blah. And then Israel comes out and dominates the hell out of Paulo Costa. Adesanya, Paulo Costa is supposed to be your middleweight rival, and Adesanya said no, he's just a stepping stone. He kicked the hell out of his leg. He pieced him up with his hands. He bloodied him with that beautiful head kick and then dropped him with punches. It was a dominant, entertaining performance from Israel Adesanya. I already knew he was one of the best fighters on the planet, potentially a GOAT down the line, but the way in which he completely and totally dismantled his main rival, a guy who he thought was going to be his main rival, excuse me, that was, whoa, that was a career performance for Adesanya, and I think that was more surprising than Jan's win. Out of those two, Jason, which one shocked you the most?
I would actually go with Blachowicz, just because, I mean, there was never really a moment in the fight that I thought Dom Reyes was going to turn around. I mean, that to me was, and because look, I ultimately did not give much of a shot to Jan Blachowicz. I was clearly wrong in that one, but I mean, look, it's, you know, I mean, Israel, I mean, you know, it's, you think about, he completely, whether it was, you know, was it the game plan that the Costa team decided to go with, kind of going with that Yoel Romero game plan? Or is it simply it's Israel Adesanya where he makes his opponents this way, and it just was very one-sided. I think it's also a lesson to the Paulo Costa team of sit there and don't poke the bear as they did all the way in the lead up of this fight in terms of the memes, because unfortunately for Paulo Costa, you know, whether you like, hate, or indifferent, the gif of him getting raw dogged that's out there is never going away.
He talked a big game. He produced a lot of YouTube videos. More often than not, we see the dude who do that get embarrassed, and I should have seen that coming. But look, the thing is, Paulo will be back. I mean, we still are going to see that rematch, because when you look at that middleweight division, I mean, there's no one there that I don't think Paulo can't beat. Not Namdad and Sanya. And that's the other thing about Israel. Who's going to take the title from this man? Who is going to do it? I don't see a single middleweight in the top 15 I could realistically see beat Israel Adesanya in the next 3 years. If he holds on to that middleweight championship for 3 more years, makes 2 to 3 defenses per year, Israel Adesanya is going to be the GOAT. Khabib's like, no, I'm the GOAT. We got a bunch of goats in the UFC right now. That's all I got to say. The farm is loaded with goats. We got Nurmagomedov, and we got Adesanya, and we got some other guys on the rise who maybe one day can challenge the throne. But when you look at what Adesanya has in front of him, this was the type of performance that makes you think outside of the weight division for types of fights for him. Because every fight in this division going forward, based on this fight and what we've seen out of him, isn't particularly interesting. There are guys who are doing some great things that deserve a title fight, but this was the fight to test Adesanya. And Adesanya finished the test in 2 minutes and got an A. Unbelievable performance from Adesanya. The stand-up was great, and just a polar opposite performance than his Yoel fight. Incredibly active, incredibly entertaining. It's crazy, the 360. There was so much hype for Israel heading into the Yoel fight, and unfortunately that performance was not great. And by hype, I mean a lot of like ESPN publicity. I mentioned the magazine article. They were consistently running that little documentary thing on ESPN, little 7-minute bit story on him. Stuff like that. And unfortunately, kind of laid an egg. There were a lot of people watching that fight. Surely there were a lot of people watching this fight. And everyone who watched this fight just had to come away thinking, Israel is a special cat. And after this performance, all I could think of was actually, damn, I hope John Jones doesn't put on too much muscle mass, because I want to see that fight one day. I want to see John Jones versus Adesanya.
Hey, look, we knew it was going to happen, that Jones would be all over Twitter on Saturday night, and he was, particularly in relation to that co-main event. But, yeah, I'm with you. I would love to see those two guys tangle it at some point. But I want to mention a date to you, Daniel. The date is March 19th, 2011. That is the last time someone walked into the octagon or as the UFC light heavyweight champion not named John Jones or Daniel Cormier. Mauricio Shogun, who defended against John Jones at UFC 128, March 19, 2011, the last time we've had a UFC light heavyweight champion not named John Jones and Daniel Cormier.
Unbelievable. It's been such a long reign of dominance, particularly for John Jones. DC is able to babysit the title for a little bit, but that championship, when you think of light heavyweight championship, for the longest time, I think the name you think of is Chuck Liddell. And now the name you think of is John Jones. That man is synonymous with 205 pounds of gold. It's so weird to see the belt around somebody's waist. But man, Jan deserves it, man. And you talk about what a beautiful story. The dude started off 2-4 in the UFC. The dude took Patrick Cummins on and lost. Our man lost to Patrick Cummins in 2017. And now he's the best light heavyweight in the world. Unbelievable. What's that?
Is he?
Well, He's the best. Well,
it's an interesting debate, though.
Heavyweight in the world is John Jones.
Well,
you know,
if you sat there and said, "Who is the better light heavyweight right now?" I would still say Jan Blachowicz, just because of, you know, what he did to Dom Reyes. But Vadim Nemkov, like, if those two fought 2 months from now, I might pick Nemkov.
You know, if Nemkov fought Jan, I think, hell yeah, that's a hell of a fight. And if either guy won that fight, I would not be shocked. And it's fair. I mean, this was a conversation we were having when Jones abdicated his throne, when Ryan Bader was the guy. Ryan Bader was definitely in that discussion with the Reyes, Jan, and I guess Thiago Santos would be the other name I would throw out there. I think the difference between Bader and Nemkov is it felt as though Bader had a longer line of credibility in terms of, like, performances against guys lately. Whereas Nemkov's performances against guys have been great, but it's still new. I think at the end of the day, Vadim versus Jan, that's a great fight, and Vadim could win it. But in terms of track record, Jan deserves the respect to be known as the best 205er in the world, not named John Jones. So, I mean, when you look at that 8-1 run, I think that's the case. But it's different than saying Israel Adesanya is the best middleweight in the world, because the list, I mean, I think you look at the guys who are in contention, it's Jan, it's Nemkov, and it's Thiago Santos. And for Jan, I just want to say he looked like a world champion against Dom Reyes, though. His boxing, the accuracy, and the snap and the power of his punches, that was a world championship level performance out of Jan Blachowicz.
Yeah, it's interesting when you look at the UFC light heavyweight title history. So from 1997 to 2011, we had 11 unified light heavyweight champions. And since 2011, it's been 3 now, if you add Jan Blachowicz. Kind of the crazy thing is, you know, you think Chuck Liddell's title reign was a lot longer than it was. It was only 2 years.
Yeah, yeah. I think Liddell is the name you think of, but I mean, that run of light heavyweights was a hydra. It was three heads. It was Liddell, Ortiz, Couture. I mean, those are the three names you think of when it comes to light heavyweight division in the UFC. But Liddell was the face of it, because I mean, he was the hero of that story. And 2 years, wow, it's crazy how time flies. It's crazy how I will say this. It feels like there's a more recent trend of fighters maintaining their peak for a longer period of time nowadays than prior. Because that Chuck experience went by pretty quickly when you contrast it with the John Jones experience. But for Jan, I think his title reign will probably be short, unfortunately. This is a guy who wins the title, but he's 37 years old. And he looks amazing. He's really puts it together. I mean, you put together the Rockhold victory, the Corey Anderson win, and the Reyes win, and this guy looks like a killer. And he's figured all the things out. I just get the sense that he's probably going to lose his first title defense. Like, again, if he fights Thiago Santos and Thiago performs pretty well, if he performs pretty well and he looks good, I think Santos is probably an ex-light heavyweight champion. I think we're going to see a bit of a hot potato, because it is a division where no one clearly looks like the top dog.
Yeah, no, you're spot on about that. Some other things that happened at UFC 253. If you're the UFC, what do you do with Diego Sanchez? Like, you can obviously see this guy loves competing. You know, you can still see the fighting mentality in him. But I kid, you know, I just, it's sad to watch Daniel. When I was doing the Fight HQ podcast earlier this week, the one thing that I asked Pete, I said, when you hear Diego's corner, and I mean, look, and obviously they know their fighter better than anyone else, but when I just hear Stefan Bonner yelling out, "Come on, Nightmare," like, there's no technical advice there. And, you know, you see the most hilarious video of last week is Joshua Fabia going up to Matt Serra and go, and basically Matt Serra's like, "Bro, I don't know your name." And the best part of that video is goes, for you running the school of whatever, you're not very aware that I don't want to be talking to you.
That is perfect. I love Matt Serra. And I love Matt Serra. So that's all I got to say about that. Josh Fabia, get the hell out of this. Get the hell out of here, bro. You took Diego Sanchez and you poisoned the dude's mind with your damn voodoo, fighting voodoo. Look, Diego should not be fighting Jake Matthews, okay? Jake Matthews is ready to go on a damn run. Dude's 6-1. Dude's 26 years old. He's been fighting the UFC. I think he was 14 years old when he debuted. I think he was 14. His mom signed a waiver and, cornered him. Because this guy has been fighting the UFC. This guy's 26, he's been fighting the UFC since 2014. You know, he was on the Smashes. And whenever he was on the Smashes, the Ultimate Fighter, or no, it was Nations, excuse me, not the Smashes. Whenever he was on that season, he was like a big time prospect. And now it feels like the check is coming due. But the reason why he shouldn't be fighting Jake Matthews is he shouldn't be fighting guys in their prime who can absolutely beat the hell out of him. And, I mean, that's what we happened. We saw Diego Sanchez on the prelims, and we saw him lose a 30-26 decision. He just doesn't have the tools. He doesn't have the physical tools to compete against these guys who are young and spry and really damn fast. Really good reflexes. Really good movement. Really strong power. Really strong compared to Diego. Physically, he cannot handle these 26-year-olds. It's sad to see him fight. It's sad to see him go out there and get beat up. Even when he wants to be aggressive, he's not able to be effective. He just is able to get countered, eventually put on his back. So Diego doesn't have the tools to compete on the UFC level. Realistically, he should retire. Realistically, he shouldn't be in the UFC. And there's nothing wrong with that. There are very few fighters from the days in which Diego debuted that are still up and fighting the UFC. Very few. So Diego should be proud of his career, but if he wants to continue to fight, I think the strategy is what I laid out on the last podcast, fight a guy like Clay Guida. It's got to be fights against guys who are also past their prime, who have some type of name value. Make those types of nostalgic fights. I don't really want to see Diego fight any younger guys anymore, even though a part of the philosophy in the fight game is you use the older name who's past his prime to build up the younger name. That's a philosophy that rings true. I just wouldn't do it because at this point, I think Diego's already built up plenty of names, and I don't want to see him get the hell beat out of him by these young guys who just have a major physical advantage over him. And unfortunately, Diego's not doing himself any favors because whenever you give up the physical advantage, you want to have a mental advantage. But I don't think there's a guy who has a bigger mental disadvantage in this entire sport than Diego Sanchez when he's got Josh Fabia whispering in his ear.
Yeah, it's bro. It's sad. Pete had mentioned about maybe he's like, I don't know what the relationship is at these days between them, but maybe Diego versus Donald Cerrone would make some sense.
Oh, that one it kind of fits with what I'm saying. I feel like Donald's just too much better than Diego though. That even though Donald's past his prime, I also feel like he would destroy Diego. He just feels like a couple levels above Sanchez, basically. But that fits to what I'm saying. The name value, the past their prime, I've always wanted to see that one. But I also feel like Donald might just go out there and destroy him in 2 minutes. I mean, like there isn't really a guy there. I mean, how many guys in the UFC roster are there that Diego would be a favorite against? Is there a guy?
Nothing pops off my mind. No.
I mean, bringing a guy off the contender series, I think he's going to beat Sanchez.
Yeah. I mean, look, I'm totally with you. I don't want to see Diego fighting a 25, 26 year old. And that's also where Diego has to look at the people around him and saying, why are you telling me to fight these kind of guys? That to me is something. But yeah, it's kind of sad to watch what Diego Sanchez is turning into.
Well, it's sad because like the saddest part is the guys around him, man. And it's just like Diego what we loved about Diego when he was young came to bite him in the ass. The fact that he was kind of crazy, doing cartwheels, being like, yes, yes, that was hilarious. But he would still make crazy decisions past his prime, and now he's got a crazy... Like, what's going to happen with Tony Ferguson when he's 30... Well, he's already freaking old. When he's 47, still fighting the UFC, what's going to happen to Tony... Like, is this guy going to be accompanied to the cage by a grizzly bear? Like these guys who are crazy in their prime are still crazy after it, and they start making really bad decisions. And Diego's choice to involve himself with Josh Fabia has been the worst decision he could have made past his prime.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. It's just sad to kind of see what happens. When I think of other takeaways from this card, first off, what a great fight between Brandon Royval and Kaikar France. I mean, you think about a year ago, the UFC was ready to dump 125-pound fighters, and I just don't know if it's message was received or, you know, what they found the right mix of 125-pounders. But, man, we're having some fun 125-pound fights. My other big takeaway from this card is we have two fighters who miss weight by 4 pounds, that being Zabara Tukov and also Klein. Of course, Klein got the win. Zabara gets a loss where basically he takes a third round off and, you know, never leave the fight in the hands of the judges. And that ultimately cost him the matchup. In this one, did not agree with, you know, I mean, it was a close fight, but I thought he was, you know, I thought it was 29-28 for Tukov, but, you know, you can't take off that third round. But, you know, obviously Israel, after the fight was over, was, yeah, after his fight was over, because being a teammate of Shane Young, you know, made it very clear there needs to be harder penalties for it. And I was driving here to the studio this morning, Daniel, and I was sitting there going, okay, what penalties could there be to get people to say, okay, they're going to make sure they make weight regardless? And, you know, and obviously Israel talked about 90%. Like, I thought about a very drastic way to do this. What if you sat there, your UFC, say you miss weight, you're going to lose 10% of your show purse. You're ineligible for your win money, and you're ineligible for a fight night bonus.
If you miss weight?
Yes, if you miss weight, you lose 20% of your show purse, you cannot win your win money, and you're ineligible for a fight night bonus.
So, that would be harsh. I mean, you would have to guarantee your win money goes to your opponent, basically. I mean, I don't want to see that money go away. You know, I don't want the UFC to be like, we're going to take away your win money. Let me put that in my pocket. So I would say that would be harsh. The thing is, like, with this situation, I do not think... Look, I believe increasing the harshness of the punishment for something like a cage grab would eliminate the cage grab, because that is an intention. They intentionally are grabbing the cage. It's not an accident. Everyone has the intention of making weight. It's just really effing hard, as we talked about last week. And I think the harshness of the penalty will not reduce people missing weight. I really don't think that's the case. I mean, there is an extreme one. If you go like all the way extreme and just like, if you miss weight, you're out of the UFC, then we will never see guys miss weight, okay? But that penalty is way too harsh and not going to happen. I just think there's a sliding scale. And I feel like on this sliding scale, there's a wide range of harshness of penalties that won't have an effect on the amount of guys missing weight, just because these guys really want to make weight. I don't think there's a single guy... Well, I would be surprised if there's a single guy who plans on missing weight who's like, I'm going to get this big advantage of bigger size. So... if we're really looking to answer the question, how can we reduce the amount of guys missing weight? I think it's more about changing the weighing system than it is the harshness of the penalty. But if the thing is not so much do we want to reduce it, but just we want to really reward the guy who took on the fight who made weight, then that's fine. Put more money in his pocket. I ain't complaining, because for Shane Young, I mean, that was a tough fight. He got destroyed by the newcomer, Ludovic Klein. Klein beat him up on the feet and knocked him out with that head kick and the punch. So I don't hate this conversation. I just don't think it's going to be that productive.
Well, I believe that the big issue with the City Kickboxing team was the fact of there was still 90 minutes left in the weigh-in time, and Klein was not trying to cut any additional weight. I mean, that's where I think from a management aspect is, you know, if I'm representing a fighter and their opponent misses weight by 4 pounds and we're going to have a catchweight matchup, first off, we're getting way more than 20% of your purse because you weren't close to making weight. To me, I'm starting negotiation at 50% of your purse. And then I'm also saying, and also I would go, it's a 145-pound fight. I would say, look, my guy's going to weigh 165 tomorrow night. You can't weigh more than 165 when you step into the arena on fight night. That, to me, I think is part of it. But, yeah, it's obviously a problem for the UFC. In terms of, did you have any other takeaways that I didn't mention?
Well, you mentioned it, but to me, the other takeaway was the Brandon Royval Kai Kara France fight. I think that's worth talking about just because that was the fight of the night. The very beginning of that fight was unbelievable with Kai knocking him down. Dude gets up, back elbow, knocks down Kara France. I mean, holy crap. That beginning was dope. Like, that was a hell of a beginning. That first round was great. And then Kara France shoots him for the third down. He gets tapped out with that guillotine choke. And Brandon Royval, what a great two-fight start to his flyweight run. If you're buying stock on guys, there's a stock market. There were a few faster risers in the UFC than Brandon Royval. So I just wanted to point that out, that Brandon Royval, man, what a stud muffin and an entertaining guy at that. So he's one of the bright stars right now in the UFC that's on the up and up. In terms of other performances, I mean, we hit on a lot of things. Juan Espino, pretty down against Jeff Hughes. He knew what he wanted to do, which is bring the fight to the ground. Eventually, he was able to lock on a scarf hold and get the tap out. And then, I guess, Ketlin Vieira, pretty solid performance against Cejaro Eubanks. It was a well-rounded beatdown. Vieira was the better striker for the beginning portion of the fight, and the great equalizer for her was the grappling. So Vieira at women's bantamweight got back with a big win over Sarge.
Do want to mention Mike Coppinger, who clearly is he's clearly in the approved UFC media list. So he tweeted out yesterday some social media numbers for UFC 253. 108 million fight week video views. It was most watched cold open ever. They had 16 videos with 1 million plus views. So kind of interesting, kind of see how well the UFC was able to do on social media in terms of the views they got there. And, look, it's, the UFC train is going to move on. Coming up this Saturday, we have got the UFC on ESPN number 16, aka UFC Fight Island number 4. But before there, Daniel, got to mention a little breaking news here this morning. You may not have even seen it because it broke right here during the show. Of course, tomorrow, meaning Thursday, is Bellator 247, and it is no longer Paul Daly versus Derek Anderson. Gareth Davies tweeting that the fight is off. Paul Daly leaves the weigh-in on a stretcher to the hospital. It was confirmed to him by Commissioner Brandon Morse. Paul Daly missed weight by 2.6 pounds. Derek Anderson had made weight. So if you were looking forward to catching that fight, the Bellator debut on CBS Sports Network on Thursday, that fight is off. So Paul Daly, who has had some weigh-in issues previously, I remember, it was a year or 2 years ago, he was supposed to fight Mohegan. That did not happen. His fight was pulled off. So, send the healing vibes out to Paul Daly, but that fight is off. So Bellator 247, that was, quite honestly, that was the reason that I was going to tune into that card. That was the one fight that really interests me. Of course, Bellator does have two events this week, one here on Thursday, and the other one on Saturday. The one on Saturday going to be headlined by James Gallagher versus Cal Eleanor. These two guys, basically the best way to put it, they don't like each other. So we'll see how that one goes down. And obviously, I know there's a lot of people who are all in on James Gallagher. I'm not one of those people. I think there's ultimately a reason that pretty much 99% of the people that fight at 135, 145 pounds have are ready to step up on any moment's notice to take on James Gallagher, but we'll see how he goes there. I do know of one fighter that's not in Bellator that turned down that fight. I couldn't believe they turned down that fight, especially when I was told how much money they were offered, which really was mind-blowing to me. But, you know, Daniel, as I look at this week's MMA, you know, Saturday's UFC card, it's not appointment television watching to me. Obviously, there is two very important fights on this main card of Holly Holm versus Irene Aldana and Jermaine de Romandame versus Juliana Pena. When they put up the fight card on the broadcast on Saturday, it was surprising to me to see that the co-main event in this one is Jorgen De Castro versus Carlos Felipe. To me, I think the co-main event should be Jermaine Durandamy versus Juliana Pena. Also, another thing I want to mention, you know, on the prelims, we've got Carlos Condit taking on Court McGee. And Sean El-Shaadi had this tweet yesterday, or maybe even 2 days ago. I want to pull up exactly what the tweet was, and it was spot on. He goes, look at this weekend's UFC card. It just hit me that if you're an MMA fan who's climbed aboard in the last half decade or so, the name Carlos Condit probably means nothing to you. Man, that's really depressing.
Yeah, that is depressing. And I was thinking about this. I was like, man, it's crazy that Carlos Condit's not on the main card. But I was like looking at his record, I'm like, damn, it makes sense. It makes sense why he's not on the main card. That's a sad thought, but I mean, you know, Carlos Condit, for those that aren't aware, I mean, when you think of what makes him a name value fighter, what makes him so great, it's simple. Dude had an unbelievable run in the WEC as the WEC welterweight champion. Defended the title up until he had to vacate it because they did away with the welterweight division. He comes in the UFC, loses a decision to Martin Kampmann, and I think he won that fight, though. And from that point forward, it was win, win, win until he got a championship fight against Nick Diaz. And it's for the interim title. He wins the interim title. And then you have GSP Condit. Finn. That is the Carlos Condit legacy. And that was 2012 when he fought GSP. And since 2012, Carlos Condit has won two fights. That's a long time to win only two fights. But he hasn't fought since 2018. He's younger than Jan Blachowicz. He's 36 years old. He's fighting a guy in Court McGee who is in a very similar position to Condit. Very much past his prime. Very much looking for, needing a victory for either guy. A loss means probably retirement. So I'm interested in that fight. That's literally like my number four fight that I'm looking forward to. Because I have an emotional attachment to Carlos Condit. I really do. And I want to see how it performs. And then, you know, I think the Adanya Holm fight's fine. The GDR versus Juliana Pena fight's fine. I mean, this fight card's all about which person is looking to step up and fight up Nunez. That's what this fight card's all about.
Yeah, it's just one of those fight cards for me. It's just not appointment television watching, especially as someone who has to be at the stadium about 8:30 on Sunday morning. Not exactly a fight card that gets me extremely excited to sit there and you know. But I mean, look, sometimes these are the type of cards that end up delivering. You know, very fun fights. You know, there's a couple of fighters on this card that obviously I'm very familiar with. Casey Kenney. He's going to be the second fight of the night. Actually, if you go over to MMAreport.com, you can watch the interview that I did with him. Also, every Sunday I'm putting out an interview edition of the podcast where it's just the interviews I've had over the last week. So if you go to the last episode of the podcast, you'll be able to hear my conversation with Casey Kenney. Also in that show, I talked to Kyler Phillips, who's now taking on Cameron Els. It was funny as I don't know if I mentioned this on the show last week or not, but like literally 95% of the time before I start an interview with the fighter, I will say, hey, man, just making sure this is the opponent. And, you know, 95% of the time, they're like, yeah, that's the opponent. And so for whatever reason, I just forgot to bring it up with Kyler Phillips and turn to the conversation. It's like, well, funny thing you mentioned that is because this morning I got the phone call at my opponent's house. So he now takes on Cameron, in this one, you know, obviously, I mean, you bring up a great point. It really, you look at who's going to potentially be next for Amanda Nunes. By the way, congratulations, to Amanda and Nina for the birth of their daughter. So congratulations to them. That happened earlier this week. But, yeah, I mean, there's not a ton. I mean, like the Carlos Condit Court McGee fight, like, I'd rather see Carlos just fight a straight up striker. Then where Court, I mean, Court, I think will strike with him, but obviously he can use the grappling base. And see Jordan Williams making his UFC debut. Jinyu Frey, I think, would be another one that kind of interests me at 115 pounds.
I was thinking about it. Shoot, you want to talk about guys that fight Diego Sanchez? I don't know what their relationship's like because, you know, Carlos is a New Mexico guy. But Carlos Diego... That's an interesting fight for past their prime veteran division would be the Condit Diego fight, but I don't know if they're really close buddies or not, so they might be. Yeah, this fight card kind of sucks, man. But Jinyu Frey is definitely there. Looking forward to the fights because you know, I love mixed martial arts, and usually on these fight cards, people make a name for themselves, and we'll see some performances, and we'll talk about those performances in particular that stand out next week. I think obviously a primary focus next week is going to be on that Sanhagen Moraes fight.
Love that fight.
Yeah, that's a great fight. The rest of the fight card really isn't doing it for me, but that fight in particular I love so much. But yeah, I mean, this is a two-fight card. Jorgen De Castro and Carlos Felipe, I mean, that might be over pretty quickly. It might be pretty fun, but... it's home in Aldana. It's Randamie and Pena. I think you're looking at those two fights. I'm picking Randamie. I'm picking home over Aldana, but that's a close one. Jason, I mean, if you're looking at those two fights, who are you picking?
I like Holly Holm. I don't know if that's going to be the most exciting fight. I can kind of see that being kind of a fight that plays out very slowly. With Randamie Pena, I think the question just really is can Juliana Pena get the fight to the ground? But I think she's a live dog. She's at plus 115. Just kind of looking at the betting odds here of ones that maybe stick out to me. Jinyu Frey at plus 120 against Luke Boomy, that one kind of interests me as well. But yeah, I mean, overall, like, it's just, you know, when you think about fights that get you excited, you know, and, you know, with so much going on in our sports world with, you know, the NBA Finals starting tonight, you know, Major League Baseball playoffs started yesterday, and they're in full swing, you know, it's one of these UFC fight cards that, you know, like, look, we always say is we're as brutally honest as it comes when it comes to this podcast. To me, this is a fight card that, for the most part, I see myself watching it after the fact.
Yeah, and I don't even know if I'm going to watch Bellator. Like I'm going to watch this after the fact, for sure. I'm going to watch I'm not even going to watch this one live because I'm not working, finally. So, looking forward to that. I might just, because I'm not working... I might just watch it. I mean, it's not like I have a Texas Rangers game to worry about, or a Houston Rockets, or a Stars game. So I ain't got to worry about too much. Although, is this on Saturday or is this on Sunday?
The UFC card?
Yeah.
Saturday. Saturday main card. Saturday. The 9:30 p.m. your time in the Central Time.
Oh, okay, so it's just normal. I'm so used to, because I mean, I'm so used to Cards International, but yeah, I didn't want to take it for granted. I mean, I'll probably just be watching college football, to be honest with you. I mean, I hate to break it to you, but this is one of those where you don't look. There are some UFC cards, most of them, in fact, that are worth watching it live. And the reason why it's the question is worth is because you got to sit through those damn commercials. But a fight card like this, it might be something I have on one screen. I'm watching football on the others. But I'm going to have to go back and actually watch the fights closely. So I'm probably going to wait until afterwards just to skip through the commercials. Because, again, it is every single week we got a UFC. And this fight card isn't great. So, look, if you're a mixed martial arts fan, go out and talk to your family. If you got a girlfriend or a boyfriend, this is the Saturday to go out and enjoy a... Well, I was going to say enjoy a nice dinner, but I mean, I wouldn't advise anyone to go out there. I'm telling you right now, I'm no coronavirus expert, but I swear to God. My job is I help edit newscasts. I'm always putting together stories. I swear to God, every damn story I did all these little like stories that I was editing, and every story was like, August was a spike for children. August was a spike for college students in coronavirus. I'm like, damn, it was a spike for everyone in August. Everyone watch out. All right. Watch out for COVID. All right. I'm telling everyone, chill out. Chill out for the next 2 weeks because I have a bad feeling about this. I feel like everyone's going back to school and those numbers are going to go up. So the moral of the story is if you're going to take your lady out or your man out somewhere, socially distance yourself. All right. We'll figure this out. We'll get fans back in the stands. But this is probably, I'm telling you right now, this is the weekend you want to stay away from people. I got a bad feeling about this, and I hope I'm wrong. But I tell you what, I'm reading the tea leaves, and I just feel like, I feel like starting next week, the big story is going to be the COVID numbers. Because it feels like I've known more people in my life that have COVID that got diagnosed in the past week than have happened before that past week. That's just a personal anecdote.
Yeah, I've known a couple people who've gotten it. That was kind of, you talk about my world outside of MMA. I was literally in a meeting with some people at iHeart for what I do with Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And, you know, I'm leaving the meeting and I see I got a voicemail that's basically like, hey, have you seen what Governor DeSantis has done? You know, you need to look this up and see how this, you know, affects with what we're doing, you know, in terms of seating capacity at the restaurant. Is we're now in phase three. And I had I had an interesting interaction with, I guess, a manager/promoter who basically was reaching out to me asking who were the great ticket sellers in Tampa. And I was basically like, I'd have to ask around, bro. I'm not really, you know, too entwined in that anymore. And basically someone not from Ford is like, well, everything's open so you can do full scale events. I'm like, yeah, slow down, buddy. Slow down, buddy. You might want to talk to local municipalities because, for example, Raymond James Stadium is a 65,000 plus seat stadium. We will have less than 10,000 people in the building on Sunday. So here in Florida is going to be very interesting. We went with the phase three on Friday. I had initially thought about going out on Friday night for the Lightning Stars game. When that happened, I said, nope. I'm watching from home.
Yeah. I think, look, you want to know why the coronavirus spreads so much? I'll tell you why. Well, one, it spreads like crazy. But I'll give you another thought. Another thought just throw out there. Even the people who outwardly are like, social distance, wash your hands, even those people who are on the fence, who are out there, they aren't doing that all the time because it's not in our human nature. So even the people who are like doing that still have the things in their lives they selfishly want to do that involve physical contact, that involve not social distancing. They're going to go to the gym because they need to go to the gym, even though they're on Facebook saying it. And hell, there are things I do still that are not socially distanced.
Bro, I...
It's just like, you know, what's that?
I've put on the COVID-15 easily, maybe a COVID-20. Yeah. So, like, I need to go to the gym, but, like, I'm not doing it. Like, I just...
You're smart. You're better than me.
I've just sat there and said, you know what? What I try to make time out of my day where I walk around the neighborhood with my dog. We go, basically, it's Apple Watch tells me it's about a mile. And we just kind of walk. And I mean, look at, you know, 7, 8 o'clock in the morning, bro, it's still getting a good sweat on because it is hot as can be for the most part, with the exception of today here in Tampa. But yeah, it's just, because here's also the thing for me, Daniel, in terms of this, is I think about the people that I am around. I think about, I'm walking into a broadcast booth on a Sunday. I'm very cautious with what I do. I mean, obviously, I mean, outside of going to the grocery store, going to Target, and, you know, I come to my main office probably once, maybe twice a week. Outside of that, I pretty much just, I'm at home all the time.
That is how everyone should be. And that's how I am mostly. You know, there's a couple, like, you know, I'll go and, let's see, what's the thing I'll do that is high risk? I will go and, I went out to a park not too long ago. I probably wouldn't recommend that. There was one time I went and I dined in. What's that?
I won't even go to the dog park.
Well, I went to like a, we don't have dog parks, but I mean, I don't blame you because like, that's probably a lot of people touching the gate to open the, I don't know if it has a gate.
Yeah.
But yeah. I'm sure there are, yeah. Yeah. And again, my main point is just like, We live in a world where so much of it is about talking and communicate, like social media and stuff. But my main point is I think the human action by and large is kind of a selfish thing. And there's and not in like a, wow, that's awful. I just think that's just human reaction, right? If you're hungry, you're going to want to eat some food. That's selfish, but you probably should feed yourself. So I just feel like human actions have been kind of selfish during this time when no one's looking. When no one's looking, when you sneeze, no one's looking, and you don't freaking hand sanitize because you're in your car and no one's looking. I feel like that's a thing people do. I just don't trust anyone. Like, you know, like how many people in their lives, but especially before a pandemic, like will like pee and not wash their hands? That's a lot of people.
Oh yeah,
it's a lot of people who don't do that. Those same people still exist in the middle of a damn pandemic.
Bro.
I'm pointing my finger at them, you know?
Dude, when I was in radio, I did nightclub. I was in a nightclub two to three days a week. Yeah, people were not washing their hands. Come on. Yeah. Like that. Yeah. That's my thing about the gym. Like, I sit there and go, and like, I still pay my gym dues. I you know, I'm supporting that gym. It's just like, I remember pre-pandemic, people weren't exactly very sanitary. In terms of like when I go to the gym, like to me, it's just about doing cardio. It's about getting on the treadmill, getting on the bike, getting on the elliptical. And like I would sit there and see people would not, you know, wipe down the gear after they got done using it. And I would just always sit there and go, man, you are a dirty MF-er. Like it's just, it's, mm-hmm. But I'm sure there's a lot of people like me. Like there's definitely been times over the last, I would say 2 weeks where I'm like, you know what, maybe I should go to the gym. But then I think about it. I think about the people I'm around. I think about my wife's a teacher and the kids she's around. I'm just like, you know what? I'm just going to do things around my neighborhood where I can socially distance. It's me and my dog just kind of walking around. And, you know, after about a mile, he's pretty done. He's like, okay, we've gone long enough. Let me go lay in the house and do absolutely nothing. But yeah. What I mentioned before we get out of here is get this Fight Island documentary coming up on ESPN. Plus, I'm interested to watch it, Daniel, but I'm also going into it going, okay, this is going to be something that's going to make the UFC look very positive. Also, like, I hope it doesn't become a public relations piece for the tourism board for Abu Dhabi and the UAE.
Yeah, that would suck if it's that, because, I mean, that's a hot button issue, you know, to do that, but... look, it's, I'll probably watch it because it's probably pretty good. The same guy who did that, you told me, was the guy who did the Ric Flair documentary. That's what you told me. And then, I know he's also done a lot of the Looking for the Fight. So I'm sure it's going to be pretty damn good. Just, it's going to be kind of like those athlete infomercial documentaries we've seen throughout the years. The Dwayne Wade one, is the one that comes to mind whenever he retired. So it's going to be positive for the UFC, and it's going to be not like a real sports segment, but I'll probably watch it. It's interesting, but I just I don't see how this thing isn't, you know, just blowing the UFC basically. And I would hope it's not a tourism board ad, because, you know, that money from Abu Dhabi and the United Arab Emirates is money that is coming from a questionable source, is how I would phrase it. And it's just, all I gotta say is I hope we live in a world that it doesn't get any worse, but that's something that could look really bad if those people in power in those countries, like, continue to do bad stuff. Like, to be like, damn, we were in bed with these people and we did all this positive stuff for them and then they did this. Like, that wouldn't be a good look. But even now, it's not really a good look. But, you know, whatever. We'll see. I'll watch it, though, probably, because I bet it's going to be pretty well made.
Yeah, I'm interested to see kind of how it does play out, but that is going to do it for this edition of the MMA Report podcast. Of course, as always appreciate those 5-star reviews that you do leave on Apple Podcasts. Also, list this podcast on Spotify, iHeartRadio, or your favorite podcasting platform. Also, we do put this podcast up on YouTube. Be sure to subscribe to the MMA Report on YouTube. Got several interviews that will be up here over the last couple of days, because basically Tuesday essentially is my day that I do interviews. So just kind of let you know some of the interviews that are going to be coming up here over the next couple of days. My conversation with Justin Wetzel, who fights on Friday night at LFA 92. Also, I talked to Ashkar, who's going to be in the main event of that LFA car, so you can check out that. Also, talked to Larkin Dash. Of course, she had fought in Bellator. She's fighting this weekend at Valor FC. Talked to Modestus Bukakis. He fights here on October 17th. Talked to Jason High as well. Jason High's not fought in 2 years, so it was interesting to catch up with him. He's actually doing a little bit of real estate there in Kansas City, so look over that on the MMAReport.com. So let's go wrap it up for this edition of the MMA Report podcast, which comes out every Wednesday on RadioInfluence.com.
This is an MJ Morning Show podcast quick fix on Radio Influence.
We started this podcast. The first episode was October 23rd of last year. We were doing it just bi-weekly at first. We did a reunion podcast. Response was great. Then we did bi-weekly every 2 weeks. And then, around January 1st of 2020, before 2020 went into the shitter. By the way, I can say shitter now on the podcast. I'm not going to be able to say that on Q105. Although, listen, right, we're family friendly. We don't curse much anyway. It's not what we do. But remember, we went to weekly in early January, and that was about a month before COVID went nuts over in China, then started to infect the rest of the world. And of course, you know, we went to hell in a handbasket here in the U.S. in what, early March, mid March. That's when things started.
St. Patrick's Day was like ground zero for coronavirus.
Jeez. Anyway, folks, so our podcast is now going to transform to 5 days a week, the MJ Morning Show, 6 to 10 a.m. on Q105 in Tampa. And, of course, Q105 is 104.7 FM. So remember, do I need to tell? Everyone knows that Q105 is 104.7 FM. But just for those that don't know, Q105 is 104.7 FM. We have a tentative start date for Monday, October 5th. Joining us, the balancing, leveling female voice to keep our butts in line is going to be Roxanne Wilder, who is already at Q105, and I just think she's tremendous, and it's going to be awesome to have her. I've spoken to her, I've met her, and she is going to be an awesome compliment. The MJ Morning Show with MJ, Froggy, Fester, and Roxanne Wilder. And that's going to debut tentatively, looks like, October 5th.
The MJ Morning Show podcast can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, the iHeartRadio app, MJMorningShow.com, and RadioInfluence.com.